Thank you for joining us for the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises.
MassMEP understands that there are so many elements to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding their inefficiencies, strengthening their internal processes, or unlocking their growth that can extend a manufacturer beyond its current limitations.
Every episode, take a journey with us as we talk with manufacturers, legislature, subject matter experts, and so many more as we head down the path of manufacturing across the state of Massachusetts.
Whether we're in the Northeast,
Southeast,
Central, or Western regions of the Commonwealth,
every episode will explain more about manufacturing and what's happening in your own backyard. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. I'm Haley Steele.
And I'm Kevin Tata.
And it is the month of July. Mm-hmm. How do you say July, Kevin? July or July?
July, the normal July. Way.
Just the normal way? Yeah. Yep.
That's yep. Right.
Okay. Just checking. I wasn't sure if maybe there was a little bit of an accent up here in the Northeast. Massachusetts had a certain way to say July.
No accent that I'm aware of.
Okay.
And no then, Boston accent for that one.
No. And well, you don't really have one anyway, which is,
no. Yeah,
you're very
Connecticut, homegrown.
That's right. That's right. So technically, you can't claim.
Cannot. Nope.
Okay. Residency to it. You live right here, but not grown up here.
Exactly.
Okay. Well,
gotta spend a lot more time until I get that accent, I guess.
Okay. You got to put you down in Southie. Because the people in Southie will say you cannot say that you are from Boston if you are not from literally Southie in Boston.
Right. So I don't claim it. I don't claim it.
Yeah. I got yelled at one time in Florida because a guy said to me, "Where are you from?" And I said, "Oh, I'm from," I did clarify, I'm from Massachusetts. And he said, "Boston." I said, "Oh, I mean, not really. I mean, Worcester." And he's like, "That's not Boston. I'm from Southie." And I'm like, "Okay, then if you would have clarified that, I would have known to tread lightly, very, you know, from the beginning, like not, no, nowhere near Boston." But
people get hurt by that. People, if you claim to be from Boston and you're even on the outskirts, even like myself, you know, just on the outskirts, they'll sniff you out.
Yeah. I am not. I live in Worcester. So Central Mass it is. I'm going with that, sticking to it. So we're here today. We have three guests with us today. This is exciting. It's been a while since we've had some outside people join us for the podcast. I'm excited.
We got a full group.
Yeah, it is exciting. Great. So we're talking today about a hot topic that it's funny because when we get into it, everybody's kind of like, "I'm not sure if we can talk on this. We don't really know. Do we have real details to back this up?" I think it's so far still kind of into the future that we felt, let's just get ahead of it, talk about it a little bit, kind of give our perspective on it and move forward. So without further ado, I would like to introduce our guests that are with us today for the podcast. I'm going to introduce, ladies first, Ellen Ellsworth, our Director of Innovative Growth Services. Welcome, Ellen.
Hi there. Great to be back.
Yes, back again. We also have with us Ron Giard. He's one of our business development advisors. Welcome, Ron.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, it's been a while for you, Ron. Are you excited?
I am.
Everybody right now is going, yeah, he is totally not. And we have a first timer with us. I would like to introduce you to Bill Goldstucker is joining us today, and he is also one of our business development advisors. So welcome, Bill.
Well, thank you so much. First time. And the last name is a bit difficult to remember. I agree with you.
Yeah. No, you're good. You're good. I just went blank there for a second. The problem is I have this screen open and then I have my emails behind it and it distracts me. So I'm going to close that now so that I won't get distracted anymore. There we go. All right. So
this is one of the tasks that AI could do for you. While you're doing the podcast, AI could be looking at your emails and telling you, well, there's nothing here. So you can close your email and open it on Monday.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. So I may learn a few things from this podcast today. I can't say that I will like all of them and then I will jump on board with them, but I may learn a few things. But before we get started into the topic of that, Kevin, you're up as usual. Time for the icebreaker.
Let's get into it. Okay, so drum roll, please. If you were to have either a teleporter to teleport you anywhere across the world or a time travel machine that could either bring you in somewhere in the past and or either in or somewhere in the future, which one would you choose to have and why?
Ooh. Can I take this one?
Absolutely, you can.
I will take this one. I think I'm going to go with, oh, see, now I'm overthinking it. This is what I do. I'm second guessing it. Class. But I think I'd go with the teleporter. Because, like, the idea of, like, I want to travel, right?
Yeah.
But I don't want, like, the idea of getting there and flying and paying for the flight. And, like, but I could see all these places in a much quicker period of time, all about the efficiency over here. So that's a technology I would certainly utilize. Plus, I don't know that I want to mess with history. Too many times that I've watched Back to the Future really can screw things up.
It's true. It's a good point. I like that.
Well, I would take the time machine and go into the future.
Yeah.
Extremely exciting to see what's going to happen. First of all, will alien races ever visit us? Right. What is going to happen with the human race?
Yeah.
Say that in two or three generations, that'll be the last generation that will die, that we will conquer much longer lifespan because of medical development. Is it going to be possible? So I just couldn't resist to take a glance into the future.
I love that. So you're not worried about the past at all, because we have books that can explain the past and whatnot. So
the future. What if I could look into the jackpot or Mega Millions of 3 or 4 weeks ahead in time? Correct. So I could come and tell everyone, hey, no, but the future, definitely the time machine going into the future.
I hope you'd help me out with those Powerball numbers. I hope.
Well, as soon as I get a time machine, I will need the Powerball numbers, correct? That's it. So.
Okay, well, I still will. So you got to give me those numbers so right. I can get some.
I promise.
All right, cool. Ron, how about yourself?
So I'm going to do a little of both. I just want to get past the next 6 months. I don't know about you guys, but it's there's a lot of anguish, right? So yeah. I'd like to go ahead 6 months from now just to get past this period of time. And then, so the other one, I agree with Ellen. I think on my bucket list, there's a lot of places I want to go to. And not looking forward to the airports and the traffic and all of that. So if I had the ability to just go to all of these places on my bucket list with less of that, it would be better.
Wow.
And then you can go home and sleep in your own bed. You could, like, go there and go back and sleep. Like, that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I need that amount.
Oh, that would be awesome.
it takes away the magic of the trip, because it's part of away from your house for a little bit. It forces you to reassess how your life is and the beauty of your life, correct? When you just are forced to crash into another type of, for a week or 2 weeks, into another environment. You cannot go back that night in the teletransporter because, hey, you bought a plane 2 weeks in time and that's it. So you're forced to stay there, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, right. It's about the journey, not the destination. With that being said, I think I'm choosing the teleporter as well. I hate being stuck in traffic. And Ellen, with the thought of not having to pay for flight tickets, I hadn't even thought of that. So that's also a good point.
Once you have three more people you're playing for flight tickets, you think of that.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's true. How about you, Haley?
I'm with Bill. I would go to the future. My biggest thing is always my concern is my kids, making sure that they're good,
that
they're in a great place, and that they're doing well. And that I can just know, and then I maybe will be not so tightly wound for the next 20 years in my life. And maybe I'll actually enjoy my life a little bit more to then maybe go on some trips and not worry about that stuff. So yeah, that's what I would do. Yeah. So we're kind of split. Yeah.
For Ellen and for Ron and you, Kevin, go folks and watch a movie called The Fly. And then come and talk about the teletransport.
Yeah.
I'm writing that one down and I'll let you know when I see it.
Yeah. 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 I think it's you know, it is pretty interesting. And when we talk about a lot of this itself is something that's a little, you know, out of reach, right? And so we break it down, and so Kevin picking something like this kind of helps with how we transition into artificial intelligence and where we're going as an organization. So
very nice transition.
Good.
Yeah. Not too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'll get things started. So this is the podcast on artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence is the simulation of human intelligence in machines programmed to think and learn like humans. AI systems can analyze data, recognize patterns, and make decisions, enhancing our ability to solve complex problems. So obviously, it's a lot more than just that definition. So I'd like to ask the entire group, what is your perception of AI? What is AI? And why would this be important for manufacturers today? Whoever would like to start things off and can go right ahead.
Well, clearly you did a little bit of homework. I did some homework as well. Surprise. And, you know, I read up because AI has become a big talking point, right? Recently. But it's not anything. The generative AI is really the new thing, right? AI has been around. The first working AI programs were written in 1951. Where is a checkers and a chess play, right? Mm-hmm. You play, you remember, like on your computer as a little kid, at least for me, yep. When I was a little kid, you know, you play checkers and it plays, you know, the machine plays back at you. You know, there's machine learning. Those have all been out there, but generative AI is really the major topic of conversation over the past year or two, right? With things like ChatGPT has really made it more mainstream for a lot of folks to understand a little bit, right? But there's so many different types of AI that are out there. So I think that it can be a lot of different things. I think it's interesting when you say to solve complex problems, because it can also maybe to help us solve problems quicker, right? For me, it is also an efficiency tool to augment humans for the humans to be able to solve things that are difficult and not do some of the other things. So but that's my thoughts.
Let's look at AI from a different perspective. And so repetitive tasks in the past, at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, they were replaced by machines because it was a repetitive task that the machine could do really well. And now our lives have become data rich, but in that data richness, there is a lot of repetitive tasks that are being demanded from us every day.
Yeah.
And so this is where AI fits in that portion. When I play chess against a machine, it's not that the machine is creative, but it has the capacity to repetitively go through all the potential plays and choose the one from a percent perspective that fits into that moment. So those language models, what they do is go through all the words in the dictionary and assign a probability that the next word you're going to write is that, right? And this is how they construct. So AI, there's a big myth about it. And it's this notion that it's intelligent by itself. But if you see, it is really capable of helping us and digesting repetitive data analytics or data handling. And this is where it fits so well into manufacturing. Same way that in the early, or when the Industrial Revolution happened, that we automated repetitive tasks, manual repetitive tasks. This is exactly what's going on, that data-rich environment that machines generate over and over and over and over. Analyzing that data is mind-numbing. And you have teams in big corporations just going through hundreds of pages or screens of data, mind-numbing. At the end of the day, it was really a waste of their capacity. And this is where AI is very capable, into taking those very rich environments and very quickly looking at patterns and looking at relevant data in there. But that's the extent of it. What you do with the data becomes a completely different thing. And this is where you need now the human intervention. I don't think that AI will ever replace human creativity in problem solving. It's just a tool that will become better and better at doing searches, at crunching through billions of bytes of data, but definitely will not replace a good idea. And if you look at this crunching capability, this is where it fits so well into manufacturing, because the manufacturing environment has become mainly an output of data, right? There's a physical output of products and goods and services. But what is very rich is in producing data that somehow needs to be analyzed.
So my thoughts around AI, as I've just listened to Ellen and Bill, and I try and looking at how it will assist manufacturing. So first of all, AI, right? Artificial intelligence. So the word itself, right, is it real? Is it not real? And how best to utilize it? So when I think of manufacturing, I think of three things. I think of people, process, and tools. And to Bill's point, AI is yet another tool that companies can either use or not use, depending on the environment they're in. I agree with Bill. It's most effective in a data-rich environment where you're collecting a lot of information. And a lot of companies are collecting it today, but they don't have the ability or the capability to process that. And AI tools will allow companies to maybe process that information more efficiently to make better business decisions. Where I'm still struggling at this point is, where does it fit in? When does it make the most sense? And for what type of manufacturing environment? My first reaction is high volume, right? Where you're doing the same things over and over again, and you're collecting data. But the tools that we think about, or at least I think about in manufacturing, it's to reduce variation, improve consistency, and improve quality. So when you think of what Bill just said, is it's going to look at data over and over, and if it can help reduce variation in your process, improve consistency, you know, there'll be cost savings. But what at the end of the day, I'm still struggling with, it's not a one size fits all. You got to figure out what's going to work for the companies that you're working with. And a lot of that is just trying to understand their business first before saying, hey, I got your solution, I got AI, because I think internally we're struggling exactly how it best fits for companies. So those are some thoughts I have around this process.
So then I'm going to ask, do all three of you use AI to some capacity in your daily processes? Ellen, yes?
I wouldn't say every single day, but
throughout the week. Here and there.
Yeah.
Bill, do you use AI?
Well, look, the problem is that there is so much AI hidden into many of the regular things that we use.
Yeah.
your car, when you're trying to park, the sensors generate a lot of data all the time. And so now many cars have AI that tell the driver, well, don't pay attention to that sensor. It's just, no. Pay attention to this one, correct? Every time you jump into an airplane, that automation has a lot of AI. They say, well, look, you know, the fact that the cabin is not so hot, no, it's not. Just pay attention to the altitude or things of that nature. So I think that today there's no one that is subtracted from AI. You use an app. And you want to, in Europe, you want to take a bus and you see what time you need to be at the bus stop. AI is looking at the traffic and things like that. If you use a Waze, a lot of people use Waze, and it tells you, well, you're going to be there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, it's taking a lot of data, traffic lights, congestion, average speed, and telling you, well, this is the time that you're going to be there. So to answer your question, I think that, yes, I do use a lot of AI in my daily life.
Yeah. Whether you're purposely doing it
or not, it's fed into my life.
So, you know, I was writing an email earlier and it's continued it for me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I was like, oh, I'm glad it read my mind. Right? Whoop, finishes the sentence. But
the question for me, it's the danger of AI from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. It's from the comfort and commodity. If you give me a map, I won't be able to navigate anymore. And when I started driving, there was no Google Maps. There was nothing. It was just a map and a compass. And you're going north, and this is the next highway is this one. But it's so comfortable. It's so convenient that's the danger. Yeah. That maybe in 20 years, no one would be able to analyze financial data without the input of AI, because it is a forgotten way of doing things. If there's no ways, forget about it. Just
Bill's going to be late, is what we're hearing.
Schedule Zoom call, correct?
So if I had answered before Bill, I would have said I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
Like I did.
Yeah. So it's your knowingly or unknowingly using AI in so many ways. And it's because we don't know what we don't know, right? And we are actually using it, even if we're not intentionally using it.
Yeah.
So I guess the answer, yes, I am using it.
Yeah. Well, I think go ahead, Ron. No, you finished.
I just want to say, with that, though, is figuring out, you know, for our clients, how best to use it so they get the benefit and not just, hey, I'm using AI. But it's like any tool. Don't go out and buy a robot or a 3D printer if it's not going to be good for your business. You know, it's just understanding first and foremost what the benefit of that tool is. And that's where we can help, right? As we're learning this whole process.
Yeah. And I think that you guys all just going through that aha moment, it does allow anybody that's listening. Kevin and I are both just like, oh my God. Like, I'm just like, damn it. I use it every day. I was so persistent. I only used it like maybe once a week. And now I'm like, oh, I use it every single day. But I think it does break it down into those bite-sized pieces that anybody that's listening, so the audience, the manufacturers are like, oh my gosh, I never even thought of these things. So it's great. And I guess, like you're saying, Ron, then how are we as an organization, as MassMEP, how are we now approaching this? Because we're obviously still learning ourselves, right? So we're learning, we're figuring this out on our side of things. So what are we trying to do as an organization, as an MEP, and then I think overall, like all the centers together, we'll still get together and talk about these things. I talk about it in the MEP steering committee, you know, and it's in the marketing steering committee, and we're talking about AI stuff. So how are we kind of jumping on this to approach this for the manufacturers?
Just before we continue, Haley, I just wanted to touch base on something that Ron says. It was about the cost of buying something that you don't use, correct? Don't buy a robot if you're not going to use it because of the cost. But think about this. If I would buy a car in 1950 with a fairly basic navigation system, that would have costed me a pretty penny, right? Today, I get Waze, which is far more sophisticated than a program that took the astronauts to the moon for free, right? And so this AI, the real revolution on AI, is that it will become less and less expensive for the manufacturing community to use. If I'm going to buy a machine and it doesn't have AI, I will not buy that machine, right? Because now if I'm going to get a phone line and it doesn't offer free unlimited data, forget about it. I'm going to the competition. I think that that's the real revolution that we and MassMEP or the MEP centers have to consider. That is AI, the entry barrier, which is now the cost, will disappear and it will be free for all. And how do you govern that wild west of data that will become? Because it will become the OK Corral of data.
Which is actually interesting for this podcast, just as an interesting thread, the how you're using it. I took and used generative AI, and after I had typed up my notes and doing what I typically do, I went, I wonder what ChatGPT would have said for these things after I kind of did it. And then I was like, oh, I don't like that. I don't like that. That's not really right. And I think that that's the important part, that A, we're sort of testing out different things, seeing what's out there, understanding from our different third parties or partnerships that we have, what they're doing, right? I mean, we're in regular conversations with schools and technology companies and what are they doing, how we're using it. But we're also talking to our clients and our board members and what's their approach to AI? Are they using it? What are their concerns around it? And so, you know, I feel that our job as an MEP center is really to act as like this, I don't know, mediator in the manufacturing ecosystem of the latest and greatest stuff and like here go do, right? And then the manufacturers who have their heads down and are trying to ship product, right? And how do we help filter what is just noise or what the sales guy is trying to sell them and say, this is the next best thing? And so I think we're doing our due diligence around this. I do think you can't really sit on it though. You can't wait because like things are moving faster and faster and faster. And if you don't jump on board with a lot of things, you are going to be left behind. I know at our event a couple years ago, Walker Reynolds mentioned, right? Like if you're not digital, you're going to be behind and out of business. Right. And I believe there is definitely some truth to that because with AI, right? I mean, if you use some of these things, I was at a client to go back to how we're implementing some of this. I was at a client the other day that we're working with and we showed them how to use generative AI, ChatGPT to start with, just as an example, and plugged in just some basic information to show them, A, how quickly what's coming off their machine tool that was getting put on a thumb drive and in a drawer, because who has time to go analyze all that data, right? Been there, done that. A lot of us have. And you spend how much time like, let me reformat this and, you know, add zeros where there's nothing in the columns. I mean, really, is that the best use of my time? To Bill's example, right? So we took that and we showed them some of the powers behind it. Not only what it can do, but to ask it questions. Hey, can you tell me what parameters affect this? Tell me what the top key parameters are. And it spit out things. Now, at this point, it didn't tell them anything they don't know because the people that we were talking to were experts and had worked there for how long, right? But you think of really also how, you know, our workforce is decreasing, right? How do we get the information that we need in a quicker fashion there are going to be some things that are obviously going to change. You don't see people out there, as many people, you know, doing things like looking at a map, the Bill's perspective, right? So I think, you know, we're working on the digital transformation side. How are we going to help companies do digital transformation, and how can AI utilize that? But we're starting off with a couple companies. And then how does that go? Testing it out and moving forward. So it's going to be an interesting path, but I mean, we're also using it internally. You know, how can we do our internal processes better, faster? Because we're all very busy and want to be out there in the shops.
Yeah. So is it true? Like, word on the street is I don't dabble in this area because we're in a different department. Kevin and I don't do a whole lot, but like proposals, things like that. Word on the street is hearing that, is this something, Ron, you could probably talk to, is this something we're looking at using as AI and using this for that reason, for proposals and things like that internally for us as an organization?
Yeah, so what we're working on, what we're talking about and educating ourselves on is proposals is a piece of it, but even more importantly is understanding the bigger picture of what companies are trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they don't know, right? Yeah. So it's asking very pointed questions about their business and what they're, and putting together a roadmap with them. And a lot of that is based on data. So yeah. The more data we can, it might be a profit and loss statement. It might be just information that's been collected by machines that, to Ellen's point, has been captured on a thumb drive and put into a drawer, right? Is getting that information and processing it, and then let the data tell us what it's seeing. We don't necessarily know until it gets processed, and it might start to show some pretty valuable information, some trends, some patterns. I think that's kind of a next stage for us. Mm-hmm. But that would then, to your original question, help us to propose how we best can assist companies, not just from, you know, a Kaizen or some safety or this or that, but maybe from a more holistic approach. And that's how we're talking right now about how to use this tool in proposals.
Yeah.
So those are some thoughts. Bill, you got some further thoughts regarding that?
Yeah. So Bill, before you answer, oh, I have a funny story, and you probably can touch on this, because we were somewhere and somebody came up to me and they were like, oh, I heard about this. What was it called? This virtual Olivia. Is that, you know, that's after Olivia. And I was like, no, Olivia? No, that's not after Olivia. And then come to find out it really is. And I think, you know, like, I had no idea. Again, I live in a bubble, not realizing how much AI we really are doing. So those are some of those things we're getting into, right, Bill?
Yeah, definitely. Look, our lives are confronted by repetitive tasks in many instances.
Yeah,
and all related to data. And virtual Olivia is a little bit of that. It's an assistant to the real Olivia into crunching data about suppliers and about databases and things like that. But I think that AI is a really important tool, and as a group, we need to learn and learn how to use it. But this is a moving target, to be honest, because AI and its capabilities are really dependent on the hardware, and we are at the edge of a big transition that will affect our lives maybe in the next decade, and it's the transition to the quantum computing. And that will make a huge difference in the amount of data that can be crunched and the amount of data that can be processed. Right now, AI has some limitations to it. But in the future, that would be really, really, really a big moment. And I think that for us, it's important to step in the train right now and not find ourselves in a decade or 5 years when the hardware has changed. And that's going to be a dramatic, absolutely dramatic. So self-driving cars are very clunky today because what we have available as hardware, as processors, are not capable, right? They cannot deal with the amount of input that a driving scenario in real life presents, or autopilots by the same token. But once you transition and go away from the current hardware, from the silicon-based hardware to that quantum computing, that is going to be a different ball. That's going to be completely different. And we as a group need to start learning. And yes, this is some of the things we're doing is inside the center, trying to use AI to help us crunch numbers, deal with repetitive tasks easier, deal with things that are non-value adding. And to be honest, that's the real word for AI. It's overtaking non-value adding tasks. Same way that at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, machines took non-value adding tasks from the operators, and now cobots do the same. I have a cobot that really is taking non-value adding operations in the floor, like palletizing and things like that. This point, AI is doing that for us. It's freeing our capacity away from non-value adding tasks.
But I think the important part of all of this is, or the thing, I shouldn't necessarily say the important part, but the part that is a little scary, in addition to sort of the cybersecurity part, I think is the learning side of things. Is the, will people know how to read a map in 20 years, right? And I recall, I think about a calculator, right? There's some people that can't, do any math without a calculator. And then there's Haley that does everything still by paper because she wants to keep her mind fresh, right? Which are people going to know how to do that in the future? And is that going to be a value add, right? And so you think about, I go back to a course that I had, when I was at UMass Lowell, and you had to put in, show all your work, right? And then at the end, if that number made no sense, because you knew it was like a strength of, it was a strength of materials class, if you knew that that number, was 10 times off what it should be, you got partial credit for it. And the reason was, hey, you're going to be doing this on a computer with a calculator. And when you get into the real world, but you need to know, not necessarily have memorized the formulas, right? But you need to be able to go, does that make any sense? Right? And I think about that with AI. Yes, you can go plug things in and have it spit out, but does it make sense? Does what it's giving you, is what it's giving you correct? And that is, I think, the most important thing. And as we think forward to where is it going, the critical thinking is going to be so important because there's going to be a lot of AI out there, and you need people to go, yeah, this, or how do I interpret this, or how do I shift this versus the mundane tasks.
It's going to be the OK Corral of AI. It's going to be so much AI that you would need AI to double check the AI, correct? So it's a fact checking AI.
I have to, like, when you say this, in my mind, I have a couple of like theories. My theory is that probably in a generation, it will be, there will be more of the Alzheimer's, because I feel that people will not be using their brains as much, and there will be a higher percentage of that. But I also think about the generations of 4, 3, 4, and 5 year olds saying, why? 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 Are they still doing that? Because have we given them so much technology today that is causing them to adjust. So because of that, we're developing the human race. So are they adjusting? So maybe on the counter side of what you're saying, Ellen, because I see both sides of that, then are they then adapting? And so will they adapt so much that the critical thinking will be done just in a different way because they've learned at a much younger age? We, you know, at 50, now trying to understand and navigate the lines of AI. And I'm kind of in the middle of the road because I didn't start using computer till I went to college, you know, and I did learn on a typewriter. And yeah, I do still do everything on paper by my math. It's just, I do like to keep my brain going, but my youngest child, is her critical thinking going to be different because she's now adapted to that through how it's worked? So I don't know. It just seems a little, it is scary, but I think there's a lot of other scary things too that come into it that maybe on the manufacturer side, do they need to be concerned about things like you said, like the cybersecurity, which we're very big on. We talk about it a lot. We tell people how important it is. Is that going to be teaching people how to properly use AI? Are they going to have to go through training programs? And is that something we're going to have to develop as an MEP center? Insurance. I mean, you know, people are now getting cybersecurity insurance, right? To help them. So are there going to be parameters of that if you start using AI? You know, the DOD, like all of these things. I mean, I just opened up another big can of worms, but like, are these the things that manufacturers are going to have to start thinking through? And is that stuff that we can maybe provide some form of support to help them bridge that gap and not think this is really as fearful as what it could be if we allowed it to get that way? But I think, you know, I do like Bill's theory on you got to ask AI to monitor AI. So like, how are we going to help kind of adjust to that? And do you think that could happen? Could that happen? Could we figure out a way to adjust to that?
So I'm laughing a bit because this podcast, we could have one of our parents sitting in our seat, right?
Yes.
And they'd be having the same conversation back then.
Yeah.
Right. And it's going to, it's going to change, right? The concern would be, what I heard right from some of this discussion was we got to be very cautious about taking away that skill set of critical thinking, using common sense. If something doesn't look right, you got to question it, even if the data is telling you something, but at least go question it and look at it. The other part of AI too, that you don't want to get away from is the socialization. Yes. Right. Is getting input from other people where sometimes we might, like Waze, to your point, Bill, I don't have to stop and ask anyone for directions. Right. I don't
wait,
have
wait,
to.
Wait. Are you telling me you're a man that actually did that before, Ron?
Yeah. Well, no, not really. But I'd also drive around a rotary four times before I admit which one I had to get off of. But,
okay.
But the point is, you know, the socialization aspect of it too.
Yeah.
So there'll be a group of us 20 years from now sitting on this podcast going, asking those same questions, because the advanced technologies that we're not even aware of today, they'll ask the same questions. But yes, they're all legitimate. Mm-hmm.
I think going to your cybersecurity question, I mean, there are a lot of people who are extremely concerned and some rightfully so from a cybersecurity perspective. But I don't think that's just an AI concern. I mean, you hook up anything to your network and somebody can get in there, right? I think if you folks that utilize AI to do bad, there's equally as many folks like cybersecurity providers who can utilize AI to detect and shift and change and put in, plugs. So I think that, you know, my major thought is you got to get on board to do one or the other, because mm-hmm. you can equally be, if you just stay still and, you know, one story from a cybersecurity perspective, Target's main hack was through a temperature control, right? And so, you know, it's going to happen, right? Cybersecurity threats are going to happen. Do you need to be considering AI and when you utilize ChatGPT and throwing all your company's sensitive information in there? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should think about it. And, you know, there's a lot of companies that have very strict requirements not to use it. But what they're finding is people go on their personal information and use it, right? So I think needing to adapt is sort of my takeaway, is if you kind of close your eyes and don't try and adopt it, you're going to be behind.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kevin. So what do you think, if we go into the OK Corral, as Bill is saying, are you good with this group on your side? If we have to do a battle.
I'm sure show my age. I don't even know what OK Corral is.
I knew this is where it was going. Bill, can you explain to Kevin what the OK Corral is?
So it was a wild fight, you know, between gunslingers that had no rhyme or reason, but they were just there and capable, right? And it was just absolutely makes no sense. And so AI could become that. Could become a fight between suppliers of AI that makes no rhyme or reason. And it's just a fight between gunslingers for your dollars, for the manufacturing dollars. And you have to protect yourself from that AI. But that's one of the things. But look, how sweet would it be if I'm a small manufacturing company that I don't have to spend 6 or 7 hours a day worrying about the quality of this baked good that has to go through the oven at a perfect temperature and speed and humidity? Because that repetitive task is controlled by AI. And I can use my time as a entrepreneur, as the owner of the company, to think about the next nice to have item. How sweet it would be.
Yeah.
Some people say that all the Roman advancement in the Greek and science and politics and mathematics, it's because they had other people that they had acquired through wars that would do everything for them, everything. So they liberated themselves from their repetitive task and devoted their minds to the higher thoughts about politics and what it means to be a citizen, and et cetera, et cetera. So how sweet it would be for our manufacturers in Massachusetts to rid themselves of the repetitive task and devote themselves into the next big thing.
And Bill, I think we talk about that, the difference of working in the business and then working on the business, right?
Correct. That's exactly that.
Yeah, so I think that's what, as we talk to clients. I do feel obligated, too, to make sure Kevin understands what a rotary is. It's called a roundabout, I think, nowadays.
Yep.
I know. Is it really? Did I thought that was, it was just called the roundabout, like over in Europe. I didn't know it was called roundabouts here. And then I still call them rotaries.
Yeah. Pennsylvania, they call them roundabouts. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. They don't call them rotaries. This is the first place. Yeah. First place when I moved to it was a rotary. So listen, yeah. What I took out of this, Kevin, is that you need to watch two movies after we finish this podcast. One is The Fly, and two is Tombstone. And you'll learn all about the OK Corral when you watch Tombstone.
I'll check them out. Might
learn a few things in those. So
I got my homework.
Well, I think if anything, Kevin, we can make sure that everybody knows, right, to reach out to our experts. We consider the three of you subject matter experts, and that's why we asked you to come into this today. Even though I think some of you were a little hesitant for us to give you that title, we felt that you deserved it. And I'm going to say, after this content, you do deserve it. So thank you, all three of you, for joining us. But we'll put their information. They can reach out to us through the podcast, right, Kevin?
Yeah, through the bio of the podcast, we'll put the contact us in there so that they can reach out to us.
Perfect. All right. Well, thanks. Thank you three for spending some time with us today. We appreciate it. And we want to thank everybody else. So thanks, everyone, for listening to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises.
You can subscribe to our channel anywhere you listen to your podcast, or you can always go to our website at massmep.org.
We'll see you next time, whether it's in
our space,
your space,
or cyberspace.